And so Holden and I were talking about the pressure to write the fairy tale, because growing up gay, and there were no books, and there certainly weren't any happy ending books about gay people. You know, I mean, I'm showing my age here. But when I was a teenager, there were the only popular culture references were movies like Boys Don't Cry and The Crying Game, which are terribly traumatic films when you from a queer perspective. And that's what motivated me to write this book, just not to write a fairy tale, but just to write a book with that was commercial. You could go down to Dimmicks or Big W, pick it up off the shelf, and it's about two girls who fall in love. I wanted that. That's what I wanted. But since I've jumped into this publishing world, I'm realising that people will tell you that you've written a story that they didn't want, mm-hmm. or that the themes in it are not what young queer people want or need. And I think both Holden and I have struggled a little bit because we write real world stuff, and the real world is cruel and it is hard and it is horrible and people are mean, and yes, of course there's room for happy endings, but there's also room for reality. And I didn't go about writing If I Tell You to only please a certain audience. And didn't want... I mean, I think the book has some great messages of hope and hopefulness and being able to come through that adversity. But now that I am, you know, staring down the barrel of miserably failing and writing another book, and let's not go there, I find myself questioning my motives, but how is this book going to be received? Is it happy enough? Is it the fairy tale? Is it the story that queer kids need right now? And
because you actually had someone come to you, like, who'd read the book and basically gave you like a one star and was like, meh, meh, meh,
another message is I've had to ban myself from Goodreads. Mm. God, that's a terrible vortex to fall into.
Yeah, bet.
But you know, I make myself feel better by finding my favourite books and reading their bad reviews. Yeah. It makes me feel great because I love these books, 5 stars all the way, and there's hundreds of people that say it's
shit.
So I'm like, okay,
it's cool. Like a baptism of fire thing, I think. It's like a baptism.
Yeah.
Like, you're a writer, it's like, now, you
so I'm a writer now, people hate my stuff. Go me. But no, I mean, no, I've had people be upset with me. Mm. Not people I know. I've had some readers be upset with me for not writing a particular type of book which people think the world needs right now. And I'm not saying that the world doesn't need that right now. I think queer kids need these happy stories. They need to know that it's not all about self-loathing and homophobia and adversity. But I think there needs to be room to be able to tell those stories without coming under fire, because that is the real world. And that's...
Yeah.
And unfortunately, not unfortunately, the things that I like to write about are the really hurtful, painful stuff. You know, I mean, Stephen King once said, you know, write what hurts. And that's kind of... I've tried to write fluffy, happy pieces and they all end up dying in the end. And it's just not in me.
Yeah.
But I think, as I said, I don't think my book is terribly... It's not a hopeful book. It's not... There's some funny moments, but I think it does what I wanted to do. But I think I think Holden's experienced some difficulties with getting Invisible Boys off the ground in relation to the subject matter.
Just a couple of people who had read it were saying stuff like, effectively, it was like, oh, we're done with... it's really easy to be gay now, so we're done with that kind of the hard stuff. Like, that's finished now. And I was like, no. have you lived it? I was really surprised, because I think you see a lot of, especially on Twitter and stuff like that, you see a lot of, like, we're looking for diverse voices and own voices and that kind of thing. It's like, cool, it's going to be a really good climate to sell this story. And a couple of people were like, no, we really want happy end. Like, not even just happy endings, but, like, happy stories that show everything's healthy and everything's happy if you're gay. That pissed me off so much. because it's not. Like, it's like being human. Like, every other human, there's, like, shitty parts of life and good parts of life. And what kind of story is it if it's everything's roses? You know, like, I don't think there's any tension, there's any plot progression, there's any character development. That's been a weird thing to encounter.
Yeah, it is. And I find being an own voices writer, people are perhaps within the community, within the let's use the term queer to save me from remembering all the letters, which I should know them, but I struggle. So within the queer community, I think that we are perhaps, because it's own voices, people hold you to a bit of a higher standard than if you were just, you know, writing a story. Like if I write a story with, you know, a heterosexual romance, it'll, you know, no one will bat an eyelid about me not knowing much about that. But I think it's just, you know, writing YA and within the climate that we've just been through is it's an interesting
actually YA just by itself, so like without any kind of own voices stuff. So I had something happen with the first novel that's in the drawer. So I wrote a fantasy novel initially before Invisible Boys, and it's not good. So we don't talk about it. I don't give it a name. It's just in the drawer. I still acknowledge that it's there, though. But I had a mentor reading it who was an editor through the ASA, and she kind of said, like, you can't do... There were a number of things, and she said, you can't do this in a YA manuscript. And I was like, well, yeah, I can, because it's my book, because I was an idiot. And so we did one round of edits, and she said, you can't do this. And I'm just going to ignore that, but I'll take on every other piece of advice because it's all sound and she's a really great editor. And, you know, but that one particular thing, I thought, I'm going to fight for this. And then she came back with the second round of edits and she just went, take this out. And there was, like, no argument. And it was, in hindsight, it was like there was a killing in cold blood. And I thought that was evidence for something, but she's actually, no, get rid of it. You can't put that in YA. Have you ever come across... Like, you can't do that in YA? Because I thought YA was pretty, you know...
I mean, I like to use benchmarks. Like, I mean, I don't write fantasy, but, like, if Edward can give Bella a cesarean with his teeth...
Oh, my God! Did that happen?
Yes. Like, you know, or if Hunger Games kids can go and kill each other for reality TV, but I can't put in too much lesbian sex... And I was like, okay. I mean, it wasn't graphic, but, you know, all the sex scenes, they fade to black because we can't go into that. Try writing those on the bus with someone reading it. Really interesting bus trip that was. But I'm like, yeah, I mean, I've been told, I've been told the stuff that you have to have in a YA novel. There has to be a love interest.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what I'm working on now is more of a friendship type novel, which is great, and I'm enjoying it again for about 2 months of hating it and wanting to throw myself and the computer out. But I've been told that there needs to be a love interest. There needs to be, even if it's not the plot driving that, but there needs to be that. Then the love interest needs to be some conflict. There needs to be. Pantera Press are really good. They're very, very supportive. I've researched them really well, and they're my, you know, you guys are my tribe here in Perth, and they're my other tribe.
Actually, the way you found Pantera, but actually the way you started writing, if I tell you, is actually very interesting. Do you want to talk about that, or
the abridged version?
The very short version. But it's interesting how it
came about because 11 years ago I fell down some steps and broke my neck, and I had to be in bed for a while. And so I was bored. I mean, I've always been a writer. Since I was a kid, I was always
glossing over this neck injury, by the way.
That's fine. It's fine. My neck still moves. It's all good. I've always written. I wrote as a child, entered competitions, went to writing camps. My mum was a speech and drama teacher. It was a very kind of creative environment for me to grow up on a sheep and cattle farm. it was fine. So, I mean, I'd always been interested in writing, and when I was a teenager, I went looking for these queer books, and they weren't there. And then so when I was in my I was like 25 when I fell down the stairs at work. And so I went down to the library in my neck brace. I was like, oh, let's get some books out to read. And I was like, I was living in the UK at the time, so I was like, okay, maybe this will be different. Let's have a look in the YA section, because, I mean, I love YA books. I don't think YA is a genre, it's more of a readership, because anyone can read a YA book and enjoy it. So I went to the YA section. I was like, oh, is there any gay books here? And I was like, no. And so I went on the internet, and I was like 10 years later, and there are still no gay books. I was like, oh, I'm just gonna write one. I was like, I got some time on my hands. And so, and I sat down and I wrote the first draft in about 3 weeks. And it was like 256,000 words. Terrible.
So like, that's typewriting.
Yes. And so, and then I was like, okay, I've done that. My neck got better and went back to work and kept traveling around Europe and did my thing. And I just kept going back to it. And so it took like years. When I say I've been writing for 10 years, I didn't write it for 10 years. There was probably 7 where I didn't really touch it at all. Mm. So I kept going back to it and reading it and honing it. And I'd read other books and I'd be like, write better than this. I know that sounds really egotistical, but I'd be like, my book's better than this. So I kind of, sorry.
Well, no, we all have egos. Yeah. All writers
so
have
I
egos.
Went and so I kept just tinkering away at it. And then I just kind of forgot about it. And I came back to Australia and I was, living. And then one day I was at my job and had a few too many after work drinks on a Friday and I quit. I said, I'm going to quit my job and write a book. Finish this book. So I quit my job. And so and I was like, yes, this is... So by the time... But this is where I was around. I'm about 27 by this point. And so I quit my job. And then I sat around for about 6 months watching Foxtel and Smoke and Weed. And I didn't write my book. And so then I had to go back and get a job. And so I just kept thinking about it, but I did it more sensibly, like a grown-up in my spare time. So and then I got to the point where I was like, okay... It's October 2015 by this point. And I was like, hey, I'm going to submit this. And I was like, who am I going to submit it to? And I was like, I've got to be smart about this. Because I was of the opinion that you submitted to one publisher and you waited to hear back and you had to wait for them to make a decision before you send it to somebody else. So I was like, okay, I've got to be smart about this. Who am I going to send it to? And so I'm a bit of a researcher. So I ordered... I ordered the last 5 financial reports from Penguin, Pam McMillan, Anna Allen and Unwin. I looked into who their investors were, found that a lot of them were heavily invested in by the churches, and I thought that perhaps it wouldn't be wise to submit a lesbian romance novel to a publisher that is funded by a church. Because I was smart. And then so I came across Pantera Press and I knew that they'd started in 2011. And they'd been doing kind of just some really interesting things with Bondi books, and they were doing lots of philanthropic stuff with literacy and Indigenous communities. And I thought, okay, these people are doing some good things. Maybe I can, find my place with them. And then I read about their 50-50 profit split model. I was like, yep, they're my people. Because that's a really good deal. Mm. And so I submitted to Pantera Press in the October of 15, and then I waited till February of 16. I was like, oh, I haven't heard anything. I'm getting a bit antsy. And so I emailed them, they're like, yeah, okay, really sorry, you're getting close to the top of the list, but we haven't read it yet. And so then I waited to June and I was like, fuck it. And because the idea of getting my book published, because I'm like, I've got something to say with this book. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it myself. And then I realised how expensive books are to print. And I was like, hey, I'm not going to do it myself. So I got an iBooks contract, because anyone can get an iBooks contract. So I registered for GST and I got my ABN and I bought the stupid EPUB software conversion thing, which is hard. And so I tinkered and got cover art and did the blurb and did it all myself and was tinkering away. And so I was like, okay, I started a Facebook page and I shared the first chapter and I was like, what do people think of this with my friends and family? And then they shared it with their friends and kind of gathered some blog posts and got some people interested in what I was saying. And then so I submitted it into iBooks, hit the button, put it in, said how much it was going to cost. And then I got a thing back saying the file was corrupted and had all these formatting problems. And I was like, oh, my God, this is just never going to happen. And then the very next day I got an email from Lucy, who is now my editor, from Pantera Press, saying, sorry, we took, a year to get back to you, but we're interested in your book, make all these changes. They were really good suggestions. And as I was saying to Holden the other day, I mean, in the final edit, when Lucy had her turn, it lost about 15,000 words, and I can't tell you where they went. I can read it, and I don't even know where they were cut from, so they obviously didn't need to be there. But I'm like, but I said, I was like, oh, what, can I have them back? I might be able to use it.
All the little offcuts.
I said, give me the scrap pile. There's got to be a good metaphor in there somewhere, surely.
But if the iTunes upload had actually worked, you would have actually... And they'd got back to you and been like, sorry, it's published.
It's published. Yeah. iTunes would have owned it.
Yeah.
So it's very serendipitous that I suck at HTML coding. But yeah, nice, so that was the journey, if I tell you. And now, as I said, I've missed my deadline for my next book. It was supposed to be submitted by the end of July, and it was not. So I now have till the end of August. And let's see.
Living on the edge.
Well, yeah, so I've been living in a vortex of self-loathing, and everything I write is terrible. Why would anyone want to read what I'm writing right now? But although I just said to Holden, I opened it up again today and it's not as terrible as I remember. Not quite. So I think we'll be all right.
Nice. Looking forward to it.
Yes.
Brilliant.
What else do we need to talk about?
I don't know. I'll talk about mine.
Yeah, let's go.
I'll talk about
what you're working on now?
I'll talk about the agent.
Oh, yeah, because I don't have an agent.
Yeah.
I didn't even, I'm really clueless.
You don't have to give up 15%.
Yeah.
You're fine.
I don't want an agent.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess my journey, abridged version, I swear, starts when I was 7 years old.
No, it really does.
It actually does. I decided I wanted to be a writer when I was seven, and I was reading, like, Enid Blyton books, and I wanted to write those. So, yeah, started when I was very young. I used to write Pokemon fan fiction when I was a teenager. I'm not ashamed of it. So I used to be I'm still very, very geeky. But I decided I wanted to be a writer when I was really young. And I grew up in Geraldton, working class background. Just, you know, my dad's does earth moving. It was just like a really blue collar kind of upbringing. So, like, writing was not really an option. In fact, when I did my uni choices, I was like, oh, I'm going to do science. So I was a bookish kid, and I was like, I'll do science at uni because that will get me a job, which I don't think even that would, to be honest, because I don't think it's really that easy for scientists. So I didn't choose writing initially, and then my folks said, don't you want to be a writer? Like, shouldn't you do something with that? They're very supportive, even though they don't fully get it. They're very, very supportive parents. So they're like, shouldn't you be a writer? I was like, yeah, cool. So I switched to a Bachelor of Arts majoring in writing at ECU, and two of my lecturers are here tonight. Thank you guys for coming. And I decided to, you know, pursue writing. Did that for a year. Was a very angry kid. I remember Marcella actually telling me that I needed to reflect because I was always kind of raging about stuff. But that was actually one of the best things that happened to me in terms of learning to write, because I was always just like really arrogantly raging against everything. Like, this literary theory is crap. I don't know. You know, I don't need to read that. Which was really juvenile. And when I was told, I think something that was said to me was like, oh, okay, cool, that's okay if you're angry about it, you can be angry. I was like, well, I'm allowed to be, like, I'm actually allowed to express that I'm angry about something. That kind of blew my mind. And then from then on, I was like, and then I think I was told, you know, reflect on the anger. Why are you angry? And so that actually started to make me reflect more and write more reflectively, like, about what I was feeling. So at the end of that year, I went back home to Geraldton. I decided I was going to give up uni. Because it wasn't quite working, and I was a really angry kid. And I was working as a labourer with my dad, so we were digging trenches to put in CCTV in Geraldton's mall. And I was like, cool, this is an all right life. Like, wake up at 5, you finish at 3:30. I'll just do this and write a novel in my spare time. Anyone who's worked manual labour will know that's not really an option, because by the time you hit 3:30, you're wiped. So I just decided that's it. I can't hack being like around all these city kids, and it's just really daunting. I don't know why. And then at some point during that holiday, it was a summer break, I just went, oh, I'm going to give it another go. I'll just get one more semester and just see if something clicks. And then I wrote a story about, it was the first time I wrote a story about, like, how I felt. And it was, like, me on the page. It was called A Man. And it was about a man. It was not particularly inventive. But it was about a labourer. And it was about how he was feeling and about his kind of day-to-day trials and stuff like that. And my lecturer said something to the effect of, oh, this is really good, you should submit it to journals. So I did so, and it got published in Indigo Journal. Some of you remember Indigo Journal. So I got published, and I was like, how the hell did that happen? And I was very confused. I was like 19 or 20. But that was the first step. So I started to get a little bit of confidence, finished a degree, lost all the confidence once you finish a degree. Like, you know, when you're at uni and you've got a degree around you, you kind of feel like, I don't know, it feels like you're supported by something and you're not falling into a hole.
Yes.
And then when you leave, it's like, well, you've got to do it yourself now. And I just fell into an abyss and worked full-time at a bank. So I became a banker for a couple of years. Hated it. got super depressed, went back to ECU and did honours. And that's when I started to kind of kick things off and actually take myself seriously as a writer, and did my honours degree, wrote a piece that's basically Invisible Boys. So it was about being gay, and it was about, you know, trying to, like, the meeting of masculinity and homosexuality, and I was really, really interested in that space because I find it really fascinating for myself. I didn't find it represented very well in the literature. So I wrote about that, but it was way too early. Like, something I've learned doing the Bright Lights No City thing that you came to see and that you guys were a part of. Sasonke taught us about you write from your scars, not your wounds. And I was like writing from wounds at the time, and it was just really traumatic. Mm. And so it just didn't work, and it just just made me absolutely nuts. Like, I really couldn't handle anything. Mm. Whereas when I went back last year and wrote Invisible Boys, it was a scar. And it was like, it was okay to start talking about it again. Mm. God, anyway, I feel like I've gone. I think I promised a short version, and I really did not do that. Sorry, too bad. So anyway, about getting an agent, I think I was going to talk about.
Yes. I'm interested.
There we are.
How did you get the agent?
Do you know, I feel really fraudulent, actually, because I didn't. So I submitted I wrote a manuscript, a fantasy novel, submitted that out to. I spent 2 years on it, and I had a mentor, and it was like, this is the novel, and this is going to. I've finally written a book, and it's going to be the one. And I pitched it to a few agents, you know, like Curtis Brown and all, with like a few others. And kind of came back one by one, no, 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 form rejections, curled up into a ball and cried. And then I think the next day I got a full request from one agent who said, oh, actually, your writing's good, I'd like to read it. So I thought, yeah, I'm in, that's it, which it's not. So that agent actually called me back a few weeks later. I was running around the block, and it was middle of summer. And I picked up the phone and was like, this is the agent's number. Like, I saved the number, so I knew that, like, when they call, like, to be, like, ready to go. So I was like, hi, so good to hear from you. So I actually said, so good to hear from you. And he went, you might want to hear what I have to say first before you say that. And it was, like, a 30-minute phone call rejecting me. So I just got slammed in a really nice way. It was actually a gift because I would have expected if you were rejecting, you would just get an email. But I actually, he was willing to kind of talk me through what sucked, essentially. And the one thing that stung me, and I think someone else was talking about this the other day, he referred to my writing as competent. He said, like, it's a competent novel. And I was just like, ow. Because, like, you want your accountant to be competent. Yeah. But, like, yes. You want your writing to move you, you know? Yes. Like, and I thought, wow, I suck. I'm competent as a novelist, but not, you know, I don't make anyone feel anything. So that was really awful. And so I kind of said, look, I'm going to delete your manuscript, and I'm deleting your emails, and it's gone. I was like, okay, thank you, goodbye. So I kind of, that was like actually a low point. I just had a restructure at work. I just lost my job. And then the novel I'd spent 2.5 years working on failed. So I was like, this is the end. Like, no, I just was really, really disheartened for about a month, and I was just like lurching around the house, really unhappy. And then eventually I, you know, had my I'm going to make it moment. There was some gym involved.
Yes.
A lot of running on the treadmill.
And Lady Gaga.
And a lot of Lady Gaga. There was. There was Marry the Night all the way.
Yeah.
But no, I just decided, like, okay, well, that failed. I'm just going to, like, essentially it was like, fuck everything else. I'm just going to write something, like, because I was trying to make, like, a fantasy novel that would sell and that people would want to buy, and, like,
make a movie and, like, franchise.
They want to sell the film. They want to have, like, a merchandising. Yeah. You know, like, I was trying to make something work, and it just didn't. So I just went, fuck it, I'm just going to write a story from the heart. And Invisible Boys just kind of went, blah. Mm-hmm. And that was the one that worked. And I sent it off for the Ray Copy... Cop? I never know how to say it. I sent it off for the Varuna Residency, we'll call it that, in July, and then totally forgot about it, which is really awful. But then I submitted for the ASA's Emerging Writer Mentorship in November. And a couple of days later, I got an email back saying, congratulations, something. And I thought, well, that's weird, because you can't possibly have assessed that in 2 days. And then I actually looked at it and I was like, oh, that thing. That thing I forgot about. I actually had one. Wow. So that was awesome, because I was like, Varuna, cool, where's that? And it turns out Varuna's like a big deal.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know. So that was really cool. And then based on that, Hayley Nash got in touch. So she was one of the agents who rejected the first manuscript. And she got in touch with me after the award and said, hello, are you interested in representation? Oh, do you have an agent already and are you interested in representation? And I was like, what am I going to say to that? No, thanks. I'll sort myself out, Henry. No, so I said yes, and she read... And I was at the gym again. So I was literally doing, like, shoulder dumbbells or something with my personal trainer. And I was like, this is an agent. I've got a number saved. I've got to run out the door. And I stood at the door of the gym. And there was, like, the guy doing, like, the Windexing of the... So I was literally standing there and there's, like... the wind blowing, the guy doing the Windexing around me, and there's like 90s house music pumping out of the gym. And I'm like, yes, I'll send the manuscript off. And she read it in like 3 days, loved it, and said, you've got a good voice, I'd like to represent you.
Wow.
Done, and we're in. So, and then actually, this is something, if anyone's going to pitch to an agent and hasn't before, the first thing she asked me after, I think before she signed me, was like, what else do you have? And I was not prepared for that. So I quickly had to like race around and like find some documents of notes and stuff and just like find some projects that sounded good enough.
Yeah. Just make some shit up.
Just make like, would you like a story about this? Set it against the backdrop of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like I had to prepare that. And thankfully she liked all three ideas. So I have 4 novels to write now. No pressure at all.
None.
I was saying, I think, to you guys the other day, we haven't talked about 5 AM Writers Club.
We were. Well, yeah, the 5 AM Writers Club.
Yes, we
are. Represent.
There's a few of them here. I was saying to you guys the other day, like, so some of the 5 AM Writers Club, we get on Twitter.
We check in. Write. We're not, and sometimes we pretend we're writing at 5 AM.
Yeah. We tweet at 5 AM.
We tweet at 5 AM and then pretend we're writing.
Yeah,
but some days we actually write. It's good to find a tribe to support you, to help you, to vent when you are feeling like you want to jump out of a window.
Yes. In fact, that's mostly what we do.
We're a support group.
Yeah.
We're like Writers Anonymous, but with. Yeah.
But at least you guys have your novel out. Like, I've, like, got all the expectations of, like, you need a draft by this time, but I have none of the fun stuff, like, you've got a novel published. So that's fun. So I've been whinging about that lately.
No, but that's all right. I've been one of the lucky ones to read Poster Boy, which is the one coming into Griffith, and it's kick-ass, so don't worry about it.
Good. Thanks. Thank you.
It's very good. Yeah.
Thanks. I'll pay you later. Thanks for the sponsored message.
This message is coming at you from... I was going to say something, but it's gone.
That's cool. No one's watching.
I was going to say something. No, I was going to ask you what you're working on now.
Ah, yeah, that's okay, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yes,
So
profound.
Next is a kind of a mystery thriller, YA something or other. So I just read One of Us is Lying by Karen M. McManus.
Oh, my God.
Anyone's read that?
Do you love it?
Yes. Have you read it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like a really...
Have you read it?
You guys have obviously read it.
You've read it?
I haven't read it, but I really want to.
Okay.
Yeah, do. It's
really,
a really good YA thriller.
I loved it, yeah.
Yeah, and mystery. So I'm writing something...
Sorry, we digress.
I'm writing something not necessarily in that vein, but I read that and I was like, this is where I'm needing to go. It's a bit of a mystery thriller element to it.
I am excited.
You're like smashing your head against the wall about another YA contemporary.
Yes. Yeah? I mean, well, that's my pocket. That's what I like to write about. It will hopefully be out next year if I can get it finished. It's a story about girls playing soccer is what it's about. But it's not actually about that. It's about a girl who was a very successful soccer player who's in a car accident. And then feels, and her best friend dies in the car accident. It's the Ballad of Tom Brennan meets Bend It Like Beckham.
I was like, when you said two girls playing soccer, I was like, Bend It Like Beckham.
Yeah, but it's not actually like that, because it's more about her. I mean, she had dreams of being a professional soccer star. That's not going to happen in her life because of the injury. So it's more coming to terms with that, discovering that you can still enjoy something if it's not going to be your career, and you can do different things. And it's also, a bit of rivalry between, people who still can do all the things that she wanted to be able to do. And it's a friendship novel, and she meets this boy called Jasper. Her dad's a soccer coach, and he's a PE teacher. And they move away to a new town after the accident to give everyone a bit of a fresh start.
Yep.
It's got all those YA things, new town,
yes,
school, love interest, kind of, but more like rivals to friends more than
to
lovers.
People are
going to
be shipping them though.
But that's what I want. I want them. And Jasper, the boy who plays soccer, she meets, he's a gay jock. all right. And he is just living his best life, and no one gives, you know, and I'm happy.
I think
that's the reason. I think I was struggling with this novel when writing this one, because I thought it was the first one I wrote it, and I'd never been published before, and I didn't really let myself ever believe that that would happen. Now I feel like I'm writing for an audience, and it's got to tick all these boxes, and it's got to make everybody happy. Everybody picks up this book has got to love it. And I was talking to Holden about it the other day, and I think I've got this thing in my head that it's got to be better than the first one. And maybe it doesn't, maybe it won't ever be. Maybe I'll never write anything as good as what I've already written, but maybe there's like five of those in our lifetime, and the ones in between are just going to be good books.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. I think I just keep feeling I just got to, you know, I want those people who read the first one, I gave it a 3 stars on Goodreads, to give my next one 4 stars. And that's super egotistical, but that's what goes on in my brain.
No, but I think we all like feel like we have to live up to, like,
yeah, and I feel like I've got that. Like, yeah. You know, I've got my editor saying, okay, we put you in the print schedule for next July, and I'm like, I haven't even finished it. It's like, how do I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And have a full-time job and a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old and a cat. I just got a kitten.
And Coles plastic collectible.
Oh my
things.
God, the Coles plastic collectible things. I feel like a drug dealer.
She's someone like, today, like selling them around the city.
And I'm like, I need potato chips. Not for me, my kids. And so today I left for work and left a plastic Nutella in my mailbox. And a stranger came and left me a plastic potato chip.
There's like a whole economy around this.
It's a thing. My children are killing me. And I'm spending like $90 at the shops when all I need is bread. For 3 pieces of plastic. But anyway, I digress. And so I'm also trying to write a book.
Yeah, just fit that in there somewhere.
But we'll get there. Yeah. But that's what 5 AM Writers Club's about, because when else can we write other than 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, and I've never, well, for me it's been like a game changer, because that's when I wrote most of everything I've done, like a lot of short stories, the novella. You wake up at 5 AM, you tweet a bit, you actually do get 1,500 words or so done before work, and before you know it, there's a novella or there's half a novel or whatever.
That's it.
I think we're onto
chip
something.
Away.
I don't think it was our idea.
I don't know. I don't think we invented it.
I think, no.
We're like America, with a right? Perth sect.
Sect is too strong.
Fine. The Perth.
We have some literature we'd like you to read after this, though.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Sorry. We've gone way off track.
We have.
Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, should we throw over
Shepherd
to...
Here?
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
How do you find your creativity though at 5? Like, how do you harness that when most people have their creativity at night usually?
It's strange. I would have thought that I had my creative time at night, because that's when I used to write, because I'd come home from work and I'd go to the gym and then I'd come home and I'd be exhausted, but I'd write. But actually, when you wake up, you're really fresh. And I don't get out of bed, actually. So I, like everyone else, I think gets out of bed.
Laptop.
And I, yeah, just laptop, dark, like no noise, no light. I don't know why, it's a bit creepy, actually. But that's how I work. And it's just, everything flows really well, because you haven't done anything else with your day. So your brain's actually at like 100%. Whereas when you write at night, you're actually pretty depleted.
So are you sort of writing like straight out of dream state as well? Like when you wake up?
I think I'm lucid. I think I am. I don't know. I don't know, is it the same? Do you write from dream state?
I do it because by the time I get home from work and... I've been sitting. I have a desk job. I'm in the legal field, and so I've been at my computer all day. And I live out in the Swan Valley, so by the time I get home, it's like tomorrow. Yeah. And I just want to sit down and watch Survivor. I can't. I mean, I have five thoughts and stuff. And there's some nights I write, but if I don't do it in the morning, I don't get a chance. So I start at 5, but a lot of the mornings my alarm goes off about when I'm on deadline, as I am at the moment. My alarm goes off at 3:30, And I make coffee and I start at about 4, and I start about 4 o'clock.
So what time do you have to sleep?
So I've got one of those, I'm not wearing it, I've had one of those stupid watches that tells you how much you sleep, and so I went and averaged like my last 6 months worth of sleep. I get about 4 hours. And so, but that's, I don't recommend this to anybody, because about a month ago I had a complete breakdown and spent a week in the fetal position because I was tired.
Why? Why do you think that was?
It's like, but I went out and I bought all these really cool different soluble supplements, and I thought I could substitute good nutrition and sleep with these German, well, they're like Barocca, but they're German, and they're called Voost. And they've got Barana and all this stuff in it. So I'm like, surely I don't need sleep or food. I can live on this and sugar-free mothers in the big cans.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. And like rot my insides, and so it didn't work. So I'm now not waking up at 3:30, and I missed my deadline, and I was like, I can't do it. I've got to have till the end
How
of all
much
this.
Sleep are you averaging now?
At the moment, I'm sleeping more, but I feel way more tired because my body is totally screwed up. Because now I feel like I need my body broken. I hope you all enjoy the next book.
Look what she's going through to make this happen. On the dream state thing as well, though, while I don't feel like I'm just awake and fresh, but when I'm in that dream state just before sleep, I often have like some of the best ideas.
Yeah.
And I wake up a lot of mornings and I've written half a lucid sentence, and then the rest is like, shabba, 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 shabba. Like, it's literally that. And I'm like, oh, this would have been so good, but I don't know what it was. So, I don't know, there is something to that little, like, that liminal space between awake and asleep.
The notes in my phone, the other morning I woke up and I had one, and it said, pony, violin, bubblegum. That's all it said.
Title?
Got no idea.
Did you keep
writing? I can't spell. But
this is a question.
Sorry, I'm just waving back at you.
Yes,
I'm
just in the back.
How are you going?
It's called hypnagogia when you're in that
half-waking,
half-sleep.
Oh, right.
So I have a question for both of you. Do you remember a point at which you stopped thinking of yourself as a person who liked to write, and then you thought of yourself as a writer? I mean, you're obviously other things as well, but do you remember that shift? Not just in terms of external affirmation. Oh, someone gave me a prize for the story, or someone's publishing this. Was there a kind of psychological shift for either of you in terms of, I guess, your self-identity?
Yeah.
That's a nerdy question, but...
I like it.
Do you want to go?
Yeah, I still feel like an imposter.
Yeah.
I think, like, having spoken to some of the 5 AM Writers Club, everyone's like, me too, and I've had, like, 2 books published. You know, like, I still feel like that. But no, there was a point where when I had like a regular writing practice. Like when I was probably about 2014, I would say. So when I started that fantasy novel, because I started taking myself seriously.
Right.
And I think that was the shift from being like, I like to write, like I'd done honours and I'd done projects and I had a couple of short stories published, but I didn't think of myself as like a real, I couldn't get in front of a room and say, hello, I'm an author.
Right.
Like, I didn't feel confident to do that. But once I was writing regularly, I felt like, well, I'm really doing it now. Like, every day I'm not just talking about writing a novel, I'm not just making notes. Like, I was always making notes, but I was actually like, I'm sitting down every day and I'm writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have been crap and it might have ended up in a drawer, but I took myself seriously. So I think that's when I started saying I'm a writer. And now definitely when I meet other people and they say they're an aspiring writer, I'm kind of like, just call yourself a writer. Like if you're doing it, then you are it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the aspiring part helps anyone. I don't know. I don't know maybe it's just for me, but I like to just tell people, be a writer. Like, just call yourself a writer. Yeah, when you're doing it. Yeah, I think so. Do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, I found that. I mean, I think it wasn't... I've always been a writer. As far as professionally, I've never said, oh, that if someone said on the street, what do you do? I mean, I probably would now, because there was a moment, but before this year, even after the book, after I got the publishing contract, did all the... It wasn't until the book came out, and I think I managed to get myself onto a panel at Sydney Writers Festival this year, which I was, you know, pretty floored by, because... No one knows who I am. It's like I've got one book that was out in the March and the festival was in May. And I've said this to Holden before. I mean, I'd like to think it's because of my stellar writing and not the, you know, diversity card. But hey, if there's a diversity seat to fill, I will fill it and I will fill it like a pro. It's like I had these meetings. I'm digressing a bit, but I'm doing like a school stuff and a meeting. I met with this high school in Newcastle and had a queer group, and everyone came to meet me and like, don't you feel offended? Don't you feel like they're exploiting you for your sexuality? I was like, mate, it's been working against me for so long. It's like, they can exploit me all they want. I mean, if they want me there to fill their little rainbow tick on their form, great. If it gets me in the seat and then I can talk about what I want to talk about, all I need to do is get in the door. But anyway, getting back to when I felt like an author, I think I was in the author green room, and that's like a proper green room in Sydney, when there's like mics and the Madonna headset and everyone's rushing around and asking me if I need a drink, and it was like, give me water, and they bought me like a bottle of like Perot, like Pellegrino water, and like I'm there and I'm, you know, and Patrick Ness and I'm in this room, and these people who were my idols are now my peers. And it was a very kind of, not humbling, it was just kind of like, I'm here and we're all sharing this room because we're all authors, and I'm about to go onto a stage with other authors and talk about our books and you know, YA Day, and it's that whole, that you know, the YA Day at Sydney Writers Festival was over 2 days this year, and there was a whole lead up to it, and it was this big festival environment. I think that was when I first was like, okay, you know, I'm now an author. Like, I'm in this room with all these other people and they call themselves author, so I can, you know, jump on that. And then I was filling out a form for my kids' school and they asked me for my occupation and I wrote author down because I was like, so I was like, that was it. And so that was only this year, but every night I still catch myself and I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, it's like, who am I?
I think you have to get over like a fear of, like when I started feeling like a writer, even though I was like just writing my first novel, there's that feeling of like, I am willing to accept being a total loser. Like, no, I mean that, like I really meant that, like I'm willing to accept being a total nobody starting out writing his first novel. And like, once I got over that, I didn't feel so much pressure to like have achieved stuff. I was like, oh well, I am a writer, I'm just like a starting out writer. But I had to be okay with like, okay, maybe I'm a failed writer, or maybe I'm a starting out writer, you know, like I'm not recognised, but that's fine, I'm still a writer. And that helped me to start.
Yeah.
Because before I was kind of just paralysed by the fear of starting.
Well, yeah, that's it. I think if it's something that's regular, like you said, regular practice, if it's something you do every day, you're a writer. I mean, that's just it. You know, if you sing every day or paint every day or play soccer every day or not even every day, but regularly, let's call it regularly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, let's not commit ourselves to every day.
Yeah. Good call. All right.
Anyone else?
One more question.
Yeah.
With the Facebook thing that you sent out at first, when you did your own, when you were going to do the release yourself, do you think it got sent out to your public? Do you think your publicist saw that and that's partly what happened there?
I asked them and they said they hadn't, but maybe they had. I mean, I didn't name them by name until I'd actually signed a contract, which was the following March. So that was my, so I mean, they might have seen it, because I mean, I'm assuming publishers probably monitor that sort of stuff to see what's going on, and to see, you know, if anyone's got a platform, I guess, or a following already. I mean, it's not like I've got a following of like 700 people or something. But
you had good feedback.
Yeah, they don't know, they're just my friends. So I don't know. I've never actually... I mean, I told them about it and they never seemed to know what I was talking about. But maybe they did. I don't really care. That'd be if they did. If that was the... Whatever their motivation, I'm glad they, you know... Mm. I'm glad they got in touch because they're wicked.
Can I jump in on that one? Because that I put some stuff out independently and that actually did have it play a part. So I published my short stories that had already been published in journals that reverts back to you after a certain amount of time. So I was like, cool, I'll just put them out there because what's stopping me? I can put out an ebook as an independent publisher. So I put those out, made paperbacks, they're on sale in there. But I put them out and just like, okay, there you go. Like, I just have something to talk about, and just like there's a sample of my writing kind of thing. And a lot of authors do that, like they'll put something on their website or do ebooks or whatever. But when Hayley called me, so that's my agent, but before she was my agent, she said, oh, I've seen you won this. I've gone online, I've downloaded your stories, mm-hmm. and I've read them, and I love your voice. Yeah. And she said they're really well done for independent stuff, but she was really keen on the voice. Yeah. So, like, I was actually a bit horrified then, because I thought, shit, like, I just put that out there not really thinking about mm-hmm. who would see it, mm-hmm. and actually publishers will look at that, and agents mm-hmm. will look at what you've put out there. So I guess make it, like, the best stuff you can,
yeah.
But they might look at that and go, yeah, there's a voice there, or no, there's nothing.
Yeah.
But it
that's
is used.
That's partly why I was asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To see if that helps the whole thing.
Yeah, but I think it can.
Oh,
I think it's a risky game.
Can. I mean, it's like, you know, Wattpad and
yeah.
lots of people have got their fin, like Twitter, and you know, as much as I'm kind of new to Twitter, but. You know, there's so many like call outs, and the authors are basically advertising, and not the authors, the publishers are publishers are telling you, managing, you know, wish lists and saying, this is what we want you to submit to us.
Yes.
And they'll go and they'll scroll on the you know, Wattpads and different people's platforms
mm-hmm.
to find it.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
any other questions?
Yeah.
Is there anything
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.